The next matter for oral argument this morning is In Re Processed Egg Products Antitrust Litigation. Mr. Brody.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Brody on behalf of the Kraft Plaintiffs. I'm assisted today by my partner, Jim Malasek, and I would request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The district court in this case erred in dismissing the plaintiff's claim based on the umbrella theory. That umbrella theory has no application in this case, where the plaintiffs are direct purchasers from conspirators themselves of the price-fixed product.
This case, I am not ashamed to admit, has been very complicated from my standpoint, in addition to having given rise to some really terrible puns in our discussion in chambers.
Excellent.
Let me get to a very basic starting point for me anyway, and that is, why aren't we talking and why haven't you utilized terminology of product market as opposed to the priced fixed good, which I think is the term you've chosen? One of the fundamental problems I've had here has been understanding your use of a price fixed good as including both the shelled eggs and the egg products, as opposed to looking at those as separate goods.
The expert testimony, and I'm referring to Dr. Bay,
yes,
referred to eggs, not shell eggs or egg products, but eggs as the relevant product. And the eggs were sold to the consumers or to the direct purchasers in two forms, in shell eggs and in egg products. And the testimony as to both liability and the effect of the liability on the affected plaintiffs was that there was an intentional action by the defendants to reduce the laying flock in order to have fewer chickens, thereby fewer eggs, and ultimately, intentionally, higher prices for egg products than my clients bought.
There are some differences, though, significant differences, at least operationally, among the defendants who have been sued here. We're talking about some defendants who are exclusively egg producers, right? At the outset, my understanding is that actually the producer settled out. Is that an accurate understanding?
Well, Your Honor, my clients only bought egg products. We're not interested in the other part of the case. There's a class action about that. There are other individual plaintiffs about that. As far as the Kraft plaintiffs are concerned, they only bought egg products, which is why we focus on that as the relevant product. And the egg products we purchased were from a variety of conspirators, some
of whom were egg producers.
Some had layers. Roseacre defendant, for example, sourced 95%.
Some had nothing but layers, right? And others had layers and also purchased eggs from other sources. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
How are you going to sort all this out? I mean, in terms of damages, you have conspirators, you have people who are completely unaware that their products were being up-priced by the actual defendant in the case.
That's sorted out, Your Honor, in the expert testimony of Dr. Bay.
Is it? I mean, is he in fact able to, and does he address that tracing problem, as I would characterize it? This is Judge Fuentes has asked.
Well,
I read his report.
Let me take a step back and then I hope answer the question directly. We don't think he has to address the tracing problem. The good we're complaining about are the products we bought. The fact that some of the raw materials came from others is of no consequence, and I can address the nature of the overcharge that our clients paid. But I think to address Your Honor's question more directly, the evidence from Dr. Bay showed that the prices charged by these defendants to these plaintiffs were inflated by the specific amounts identified in his report due to the conspiracy. He identified on a product-by-product basis and a transaction-by-transaction basis, showing the nature of the overcharge due to the conspiracy that found its way to the direct sale of egg products from these defendants to these plaintiffs.
All as a result of conduct that limited the supply of the layers, correct? You don't allege any other anti-competitive action occurring later in the process?
Correct. The anti-competitive conduct was directly focused on the product my client purchased. The defendants conspired.
Stop there again. I'm getting confused. Your client purchased processed eggs.
Purchased egg products, correct.
Yeah, egg products, not yes. The eggs themselves. But the eggs themselves were the target of the price-fixing conspiracy.
The eggs themselves were a target, but there's also evidence in this case,
well,
Your Honor.
Again, help me understand what your conspiracy theory is here, because I understand it to be the adoption by egg producers, those with layers, of various recommendations from the two trade organizations that are named parties here. Is that right?
Among other things.
Increase of cage space, you know, the
backfilling ban.
The backfilling as well as the sales to out-of-country purchasers, I believe.
Well, let me address one of them. I think I can answer both of
your
questions.
So that's all directed to the eggs themselves?
No, that's where we differ. The 100% rule, for example, was a requirement that initially was applied just to the companies that had layers. The rule was changed after debate and required to be applied to the egg product producers as well. The conspiracy was...
How would that work? I mean, how would the egg processors be called upon to adhere or adopt in practice the recommendations relative to cage size?
Well, they did adopt them by adopting a rule that said we will no longer buy eggs from parties that do not comply with this. And in order to obtain the certification they wanted to put on their egg products, they had to comply with the 100% rule and the backfilling ban and the cage size requirements that the shell egg producers had to comply with. So the liability claim, and Your Honor, the defendants did not move for summary judgment on the grounds of liability. They moved on standing, and that was the ruling below, and I submit it was error. But on the question I think that Judge Stark asked about whether there was independent wrongful conduct that somehow touched the processing of the eggs, the answer is yes, there was. There was independent conduct.
If it can be shown that the egg products producers were... in a failing industry, let's say, they were getting hurt because prices were going down. Is there anything wrong with their limiting supply in order to stay afloat?
Not through the means they did. They, through unlawful, intentional, concerted action, reduced the supply of an input with the intentional objective of increasing prices to consumers. The antitrust laws prohibit that. So, no, I don't think so. And in this case, the intentional conduct was directed in a way so it was intended to affect the egg products, not the shell eggs themselves.
So do you disagree when the district court said the alleged misconduct all took place in the production of eggs? That was wrong?
Yes. I contend the wrongful conduct took place in the intentional restriction of supply by these defendants, knowing, as they did, that restriction of supply would raise the price of egg products sold to my client. And my client paid an overcharge of $111 million as a consequence.
So you I think you said, and is it your position that Dr. Bay can determine the portion of the non-conspirator raw eggs that went into the products that were brought here?
No, Dr. Bay has not attempted to parse out the overcharge that my client paid, for example, to Roseacre, and what portion of that can be traced back to eggs that came from others.
But he can trace what was paid to the conspirators in the case.
Directly, exactly. And that's our point. To prove standing, we only need to prove that we are direct purchasers from a conspirator. And the claim in this case, which is sufficient to survive a motion for summary judgment.
Well, some of those payments went to non-conspirators, but he can isolate what went to the conspirators.
All of my client's payments went to conspirators, period. some of those conspirators sourced eggs from third parties, and some of them did so at contracts that permitted them to obtain a lower price from those egg product egg producers and charge a higher price to my clients.
So is that ultimately a tracing problem for damages purposes and not a problem for standing?
It's certainly not a problem for standing. The standing cases, you can go back to Hanover Shoe and follow it all through this court's rulings, say that these complex issues of damage allocation are not matters for standing. You look to the directness of injury, and we have a direct injury.
I want to understand how your claim compares to the claim in the Stotter case, the sugar industry case. At least part of your claim, it seems to me, is entirely analogous to Stotter. You're purchasing from a defendant that's an alleged conspirator and uses a price-fixed good as part of the product it's selling to the purchaser plaintiff, correct?
Correct. And in the sugar case, there was no liner board would be the same, no separate allegation of wrongdoing in the manufacturing of candy or in the manufacturing
of
corrugated.
You want to go beyond that and also recover damages for all of the eggs that the defendants purchased from non-conspirators, correct?
No. I only want to recover damages for the egg products, which are right, what we allege to be the price-fixed good.
But the fact is that in fact, probably most of that egg product was made with eggs that were acquired by the defendants from non-conspirators.
Well, I would challenge most, but I'll give you some, yes.
Okay, but however much it is, you want to recover on all of the sales to you, regardless of where the egg came from to the defendant, correct?
Correct. We only want to recover on the sales to the Kraft plaintiffs of egg products.
Should we even be considering whether to remand this case for you solely to be able to proceed because you only have standing to the extent your claim overlaps with a Stotter claim?
I think the better option would we request that you would reverse and not remand on that ground, instead say that it was error to find we didn't have standing. We did have a direct injury from the purchase of egg products. But if your honors were to conclude that the claim must be somehow parsed to exclude purchases of a price-fixed good that incorporate some other product obtained from others, which we would submit would be a new rule, then at a minimum we'd be entitled to a remand to address that.
I think if you've acknowledged you don't have an expert who has done the work to parse that out if that were our conclusion. Correct?
I believe our expert has not done that, correct, because we're unaware of any legal requirement that so requires that. Our allegation, and we believe it's sufficient on a motion for summary judgment, really not challenged by the defendants, is that we were the victims of a price-fixing conspiracy of egg products, and that's what we showed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll have you back on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Brody. Ms. Mann, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, close enough, Your Honor. Carrie Mann with Weil Gotch on behalf of the defendant appellees. Thank you all very much. Your Honors, I think that there are some very fundamental and undisputed facts that are highly relevant to the decision that was made here. The first is, as some of you pointed out earlier during my opponent's argument, is the vast majority of raw egg used to produce processed egg products that the plaintiffs purchased and for which they seek damages were not produced by defendants. They were, in fact, produced by completely different companies that many of whom don't even own hens, so they're not users, as to use the term that you used earlier. And they've never been alleged to be part of that conspiracy.
Mr. Brody says he can his expert can separate the two.
I don't believe that that's accurate, sir, nor do I think it's anywhere in the record. I think what his expert has said is it's irrelevant. And as Judge Prater observed, no one has put forth any evidence, and she does not believe that Dr. Bay can make that distinction. He cannot. 9 years ago, these plaintiffs made the decision, in an all-or-none decision, that they were going to pursue damages on their purchases of egg products that included not only raw egg produced by defendants, but also raw egg produced by non-conspirators and non-defendants. That decision has guided this litigation for 9 years. There has been no discovery, Your Honor, of egg processing companies that were not part of the conspiracy, that don't own hens. They weren't deposed. There's no data.
They clearly have antitrust standing with respect to that first part of the claim, though, don't they?
I think that if they were able to, if the evidence was in the record that would allow these plaintiffs to align themselves with the plaintiffs in Sugar, if they could in some way trace the raw egg from a conspiring defendant through staying internal with that conspiring defendant the entire time, the fact that the conspiring defendant then sold it in a different form doesn't necessarily insulate them. We are not arguing that.
So that's a proof argument, but you acknowledge they have standing to press that claim.
I would acknowledge, I think, Your Honor, that they have standing to press that.
In effect, doesn't In Re Sugar control this case?
I'm sorry.
In Re Sugar, doesn't that case control the disposition of this case?
I think Midwest Paper and Sugar both control. I don't think they're in the Sugar context. You know, when you look at the Sugar case, Your Honor.
Well, the final product in that case was combined with other fixed material.
It was, Your Honor. In Sugar, the defendant that was accused of conspiring took the sugar that was the subject of the conspiracy and used it as an input into another product and sold it. That's not what happened here. What happened here is you have a non-conspiring producer, not part of the conspiracy, producing raw egg, selling that in a completely separate transaction under terms for which there's no discovery, so we don't know. We don't know the price. We don't know why that producer priced the way that he did. We know nothing about that transaction. That transaction was made to a defendant in this case, and then the defendant took that raw egg, processed it into an egg product, like, you know, dried egg powder or liquid egg yolks with sugar added, whatever product it ends up being, and then they sold Kraft that product. This is the quintessential umbrella policy. The only allegation of misconduct in this case is at the production level, not two transactions later after the raw egg has been manufactured into an egg product.
What we know about that transaction between the layer or the shell egg producer and the defendants here is that the plaintiff's expert says all of the eggs that went from the layer to the defendants were price fixed, overcharged, as a result of actions that the defendants conspired to take.
That is not actually what the expert says. What the expert says is it's irrelevant to his economic analysis where that egg comes from.
Because all of them were price fixed based on conduct the defendants conspired to be part of. Isn't that what he says?
I don't believe that is what he says, Your Honor. What he says is, to him, as an economic matter, it doesn't matter where the egg came from. It's almost the same argument as if the Dr. Bay were saying, as a fundamental precept of supply and demand, if you raise prices here, it's going to raise prices all throughout the umbrella. He is assuming the umbrella theory. That may be true from an economic standpoint. We don't know. But the Supreme Court has made clear that it doesn't really matter if that is always true, sometimes true. The legal question is this plaintiff a direct enough plaintiff that the federal courts will undertake that analysis to trace the harm through? And the Supreme Court in this case would say no.
Could you address the moral hazard argument that the plaintiff raises? They suggest if you're right, and they can't recover for overcharges they paid to your clients, then nobody can recover that, and more so, folks in your client's position will have an incentive to purchase maybe just a minimal portion of their inputs from non-conspirators so that they can avoid 100% liability.
Right, and they have a hypothetical in their reply brief, Your Honor, that suggests that a clever defendant would be able to purchase 5% and then kind of shield themselves and immunize themselves from liability And that argument, sir, misstates not only our position but also the district court's opinion. And frankly, it diverts attention away from the plaintiff's strategic decisions to ignore whether the products they purchased were made from eggs produced by non-consumers or not. Contrary to that hypothetical, the hypothetical purchaser could sue Seller B, which produces 95% of its own egg supply, for overcharges on egg products made with Seller B's own raw egg. As we explain in our opposition brief, Your Honor, in some instances when a purchaser of finished products performs the requisite investigation to determine the source of the raw material used in its products, the purchaser can pursue damages as to products sold by conspirators that produced both the raw material and the finished product.
But if that's the sugar case. If 100% of the shell eggs are price fixed, which is what their expert, I think, says, then why do they have to go through the tracing, and why can't they recover 100% from B?
As Judge Prater pointed out, no discovery has been delineated for the court's consideration that would assist in the determination as to which egg products used which eggs.
Right, but the question I'm asking is, why do they have to do that? If the theory of the case, and their expert supports it, is 100% of the shell eggs are price fixed due to things that the defendants did, then why do they have to trace it at all?
They have to trace it, Your Honor, because Section 4 requires that they have standing, that they have antitrust injury. This isn't simply a question of calculating damages. This is a question of whether they are the plaintiff that Section 4 was designed to protect.
They're a direct purchaser, and they paid an overcharge on their theory to your clients. Mm-hmm. Why isn't that enough for them to have antitrust standing?
Because they are not a direct purchaser of the product that came out of the price-fixing agreement they allege. Throughout their briefing, they use the phrase price.
Could you explain that? Why are they not a direct purchaser? Kraft says, yes, we are direct purchasers. We bought this product and we paid for this product.
And it all comes down, Your Honor, to the question of what product are we talking about, which previewed perhaps Judge Smith's original questions of what is this phrase.
You're saying they didn't buy the price-fixed product,
is
it?
Yes. The price-fixed product in this case, their theory has consistently been, for 9 years of litigation, their theory has been that the anti-competitive harm here has been amongst producers of raw egg that conspired to reduce the size of the flock.
Is that really a damages issue, or is that a standing issue?
This is a standing issue, Your Honor. This is not simply being able to count. This is a question of whether they are the plaintiffs that the Supreme Court would say have a right under Section 4. Are they, when you look at the phrase that this court recently used in Modafinil, are they the plaintiff that satisfies the all-important directness requirement? And our answer to that is no. You know, at no point during all of the proceedings in the district court have the plaintiffs ever suggested any kind of anti-competitive conduct, any anti-competitive pricing, any agreements, any communications amongst processed egg products companies. It is all up here.
Is that a matter for standing, or is that a matter for proof?
That's a matter for standing, sir, because the question is, they're attempting to recover, they claim an injury for a purchase of product B, but the only anti-competitive conduct they allege relates to product A. Now, A is an input into product B for sure, but if you assume that both products weren't called eggs or didn't have egg in the title, if you use the analogy, for instance, of assume the conspiracy that they've alleged to reduce the size of the flock, which means that there's less raw egg in the market, price goes up. Assume for a moment that the second product in the chain is not a processed egg product, it's mayonnaise. Assume my client, Michael Foods, also manufactures mayonnaise. If Michael Foods produced the raw egg pursuant to this agreement, so it is a price-fixed product, to use their terminology, and took that directly processed it into mayonnaise, sold it as mayonnaise to a customer, there would be a very clear stream, nothing interrupted, no other transactions, no other producers. Under Sugar, they would have standing to sue for the Persianis. In this case, you have Michael Foods buying raw egg from a non-conspirator. They're buying this raw egg at different prices. Most of it, for whatever it's worth, is not even certified egg under the UEP certified program. They take that product, in some sense, you know, if they're buying it from a non-defendant, they take that product and make the mayonnaise with that. In that case, the purchaser of the mayonnaise has no standing because their purchase is unrelated to the conspiracy that's at the heart of the plaintiff's complaint.
Do you have any concern here about a duplicative recovery that your client could be on the hook more than once for the same harm if we went with the plaintiff's theory?
I think the risk of duplicative recovery is here, just as it is behind all of the Supreme Court's.
Can you articulate an example of how that would happen if we went with the plaintiff's approach?
If these plaintiffs were, well, you know, sir, I think actually that in addition to duplicative recovery, the more significant concern may be the fact that it's unclear when you have this intervening transaction. It's not clear that there's any damage to recover at all. To circle back to a question that you had asked earlier, or phrased earlier, was the question of whether, if they're not the direct purchaser, who else could sue? Well, there is a class. You know, by the time these plaintiffs opted out, there was a nationwide class of direct purchasers of shell eggs and egg products that had been litigating the case for 3 years. So it isn't a situation where the only person that could possibly ever detect and punish this particular conduct is these plaintiffs.
But that class wasn't going to recover the overcharges paid by Kraft if Kraft wasn't part of the class.
That is true, but they would be recovering if these charges were within the scope of the case. They would have recovered for every other purchase in America.
All right, but on Kraft's theory, no one can recover the overcharges that Kraft paid to your clients if we affirm the district court.
But I don't think the Supreme Court is looking as whether Kraft specifically, whether they specifically will have their damages, right? Section 4 is designed as an incentive statute. You want to have, you balance the two tests. You balance the two kind of two sides of the scale. Will Section 4, can you, with sufficient clarity, trace an injury to a direct purchaser to satisfy that in such a way that you also disincentivize plaintiffs from violating the Sherman Act, I'm sorry, defendants from violating the Sherman Act, and plaintiffs to act as private attorney generals. This is clearly not a situation where, absent Kraft's endeavors, all of these defendants will never get sued and there will never be damages. Litigation's been ongoing for nearly a decade.
You don't suggest that whenever a defendant combines its own products with the ingredients of non-conspirators, there is no standing?
Absolutely not. We do not say that. We make it very clear, I think, in our briefing that...
But you're saying that did not happen here.
That did not happen here. Had they sought discovery, if they had a record, had they made a different litigation strategic decision to attempt to recover only for those damages, they may have standing under Sugar, but they did not do that. In the sense,
they did not separate the damages between the conspirators and non-conspirators?
They did not separate any of the transactions. They have no way of knowing.
And you say that's fatal to standing.
I do. I do. To the extent that there was error committed in this case, it was the strategic decision to pursue an all or nothing liability story, not an error in Judge Prater's opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brody. We'll have you back for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate that. I agree with what Ms. Mahon said when she said the important question is what product are we about? I agree with that. And as I learned in first-year civil procedure, the plaintiff is the master of the complaint and gets to allege the claim in the case. The Kraft plaintiffs alleged a conspiracy to increase the price of egg products. And we proved through liability evidence and through expert evidence of damage that that, in fact, happened. The claim is that egg products were price-fixed goods, and the defendants, these defendants, carried out that conspiracy to increase the price of egg products by reducing the number of chickens laying eggs. And the economic evidence demonstrates that that conspiracy was effective. By decreasing the number of chickens and thereby decreasing the number of eggs, the defendants intentionally increased the market price of egg products. Dr. Bay analyzed the Erner Berry price indices for egg products and showed, as a matter of economic proof, direct consequence, reduction of size of flock, increase in egg products. Now, they want to talk about shell eggs, and they want to talk about the class action, they want to talk about claims raised by others. I understand that. My clients bought overpriced egg products. They bought overpriced egg products to the tune of $111 million. And if this judgment below is not reversed, defendants will escape liability altogether.
Well, the last point that I was discussing with counsel is your inability to separate the egg products that were used by the defendant conspirators.
Separating eggs is another bad pun, Judge.
Well, you get the point.
You do not separate the input.
Yes. Is that a matter for standing or is that a matter for damages?
It's not a matter of standing. We have standing. The Kraft plaintiffs have standing because we are the direct purchaser of egg products, which is what we allege to be the price-fixed good. Now, there were other plaintiffs making other claims. Those are not our clients. We opted out of a class action. We don't join that claim. The fact that other parties are claiming other things doesn't mean the Kraft plaintiffs cannot sue for the damages they suffered. And these defendants were not just buying eggs from others. The Roseacre Farms bought 95%, internally sourced 95% of their eggs. Under the district court's ruling, they walk. There's no liability. Michael Foods internally sourced 26% of its eggs. Under the district court's theory, even though we substantially were injured by the overpriced products they sold to us, whether they came from their own eggs or others, these defendants escape liability. The defendants like to point to a chain of distribution and suggest there are many steps in the chain of distribution from the chicken to the eggplant to Kraft. There's one chain, one step in this chain. The defendants made egg products and we bought them. And that's what we're suing for.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. Thank you, Ms. Mann. Counsel, this, as I said at the outset, is at least to me a difficult case, at least one that likes of which I have not seen before. We will take the case under advisement.